Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 17th of Sivan. Today I'm going to do something a little bit different in a couple of ways. First, I don't know if listeners know this, but I have been doing something like this format of response a day on a website called TorahMusings.com for a little while. There I wrote summaries of various tshuvot, and I was doing one a week. So usually they're not going to be the ones that I'm doing. This time around, they're not the ones I'm doing because I'm doing the ones for either Shabbat or for either Friday or Shabbat on Torah Musings I'll do. Whereas these are generally from Sunday through Thursday. So there won't be that much overlap. But occasionally I will come across a tshuva that I've already written there, and I could theoretically just tell you to read it there. But I'm going to present those tshuvot to you here in this format as well. So for today, the 17th of Sivan, I happen to have previously written that up and sent it out. I sent that out as an email also to those who would like to be on an email list of these kinds of one tshuva a week. They can contact me at grothst@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to put you on the list. And then you'd get one a week in writing, as well as you could listen to the ones that we're doing here. For this one, the 17th of Sivan, I'm actually going to do two short tshuvot because they're both related to Hilchot Shabbat questions. So, as I've said before, I try to get a variety of issues here in this thing so we can see a broad sweep of halakha. So these were two different issues when it came to Hilchot Shabbat issues. And in both cases, the Meshivim, I tend to like the cases where Meshivim, where respondents are being matir or allowing something or being lenient on a question. In this case, there are going to be problems that they're going to be upset about or bothered by, and we'll see that as well. But as I've always said, when you see a giant in halacha at work, it's always a productive experience. So for the 17th of Sivan, they wrote them almost a century apart. The first tshuva is from a man named Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer. Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer is a famous German rabbi. He was a student of Rabbi Isaac Bernays. He was a student of Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger. He was like a very, very well-known rabbi, and he started the seminary in Berlin, the rabbinical training ceremony in Berlin that would eventually be known as the Hildesheimer Seminary, and it was a place where it was accepted that rabbis could have a secular education in addition to their Torah education. It was in many ways a forerunner of things like YU or Reitz or modern orthodoxy and all those kinds of things. It was an important element of German Orthodoxy before World War II, before World War I of German Orthodoxy. And he has some responsa, which are published as Shut Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer. So in the first volume there, in Orach Chaim, chapter 42, he was asked a question, or he was responding to another rabbi about, it seems it's about heating water on Shabbos, or heating some kind of a liquid on Shabbos. And the questioner, the person he's writing to, is a man named Rav Shlomo Dov Filstein, who was a rabbi in Odessa and also a well-known rabbi of his time and a halachic authority. And Rabbi Filstein had argued for various ways that you could allow taking a container of food or liquid that was cold, and if you had a large container of hot water, put the container into the hot water, and in that way, heat up whatever's in that container. So if, for example, I have, and a simple example would be a baby bottle. Let's say I have a baby bottle with milk in it. The milk is cold, and I want to warm it up, and it will be actually relevant that I don't want to warm it up to be hot. I want to warm it up just to take away some of the cold. This Rabbi Filstein thought that if I put the bottle into a larger container of hot water, but not all the way, as long as I don't submerge it all the way, that should be okay, so that's the discussion they're going to have with each other. He held it. Filstein thought that if you leave the top of the item unsubmerged, that would be sufficient to avoid problems of hatmana. So hatmana is one of the problems with heating things on Shabbos. Hatmana is the problem of completely surrounding something with heat. So there is a prohibition of hatmana, a rabbinic prohibition that we're not allowed to put something completely surrounded by heat, and this would avoid it because it's not completely surrounded. That depends, though, on what we assume about the case in a Gemara in Shabbat on 38b to 39b. There's a long discussion about the people of Tveria. The people of Tveria had a pipe that ran through their hot springs in order to get hot water for themselves on Shabbat. And that seems to have been a problem, but the question is, what was the problem? So Rabbi Filstein thinks the problem was that the pipe was fully submerged. And since it was fully submerged, that was the issue. But Rabbi Hildesheimer is not sure that it was fully submerged. He thinks even if it was partially submerged, it might still have been a problem. Rav Hildesheimer says that the language of many Rishonim is unclear, but that Tosfot speak of it having walls all around it, but that implies that if it's completely uncovered on top, this is a Filstein thing, that should be sufficient as well. But just having a cover that, and if it's completely uncovered on top, sorry, Rav Hildesheimer says, if it's completely uncovered on top, meaning open, that should be okay. But if it has a cover, meaning, so that cover, what will that cover do if it's not under the water, if it's not submerged in the water, the cover will still nonetheless make sure that it will retain whatever heat goes into the item. So Rav Hildesheimer is saying that it could be that in the Gemara, if I take something covered and surrounded, and I put much of it into a heat source, that would be a problem, hatmana, because the heat that's going to then go into this item, this baby bottle for our sake, it's going to be held to it by the covering around it. If, however, he seems to be implying, if the baby bottle was uncovered on the top, that would be a different situation, because then there wouldn't be a hatmana issue. Now, the pot they were talking about had some kind of a liquid in it, and they were both clear that the goal wasn't to reheat the food, it was to warm it enough that it wasn't cold, right? You have this question all the time. I take food out of the refrigerator. It's not that I want it to be hot, it's that I just don't want it to be freezing. Baby bottle is an excellent example. So one problem, though, is there's a debate it's about liquid. There's a debate in halacha about whether liquid once cooked, so if I have a soup that was cooked, can it ever lose that status of cooked? Okay, when it comes to dry foods, vegetables, meat, chicken, the rule in the Gemara is, and this is well accepted, ein bishul achar bishul, that once it's been cooked, there is no halachic concept of cooking it again. There can be other halachic issues that come up with reheating it, but not cooking, right? It's not going to be a cooking issue. It'll be other problems could come up, and you have to talk to rabbis, and you have to figure that out. But cooking is not going to be the issue in completely dry foods that were cooked. With liquids, Rav Hildesheimer assumed, and I think we assume this today as well, that if they cool off completely, and cool off completely for him will mean that it's no longer yad so let it bo, that it's no longer hot to the touch such that somebody's hand would pull back from touching it, that reheating then would qualify as bishul. I'm sorry, if it's not completely cooled off, leave that out first. I will come back to that in a second. If it's not completely cooled off, reheating, if it is completely cooled off, he thinks reheating qualifies as bishul, as actual cooking. And therefore, whereas the questioning rabbi said, if the problem with putting one container into another is hatmana, then why are you raising the bishul issue, right? If it's a hatmana issue, it's a hatmana issue even if they're not cooking. And if it's the cooking that concerns, as he says, then don't raise the hatmana problem. In other words, the questioner is hinting at that he's not sure that we rule that way, like Rabbi Hildesheimer said. He thinks that maybe even if liquids are completely cooked and then completely cooled, nonetheless, just like dry foods, maybe we rule that there too there's no problem recooking. Rabbi Hildesheimer points out that the Shulchan Aruch rules that that's not true. That we rule in the Shulchan Aruch, that liquid that is fully cooled is no longer considered cooked, and therefore we could consider cooking. So in other words, this Rabbi Filstein was looking for a way to be matir, something to allow something, and therefore he's raising a certain questions about halacha. And on this particular issue, Rabbi Hildesheimer's answer is, well, it's a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that I'm assuming here, and you're trying to question that, but we don't. So then the question of Rav Filstein says, the Gemara in Shabbos 40b is where the issue of putting cold items into hot ones comes up most directly, and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi there allows putting cold items into a klisheni. So a klisheni is a container of hot food or liquids that was never on the fire. So for example, if somebody takes water out of an urn that's plugged in or on a flame, the container into which the water is put is a klisheni. Right, if I just unplugged that urn, you can't unplug an urn on Shabbos, but let's say I just removed it, let's say it wasn't an electric urn, I had a big pot of hot water and it's on a blech or it's on a fire, and then I take it off the fire. That's called a kli rishon. But if I pour the water out, that's called a kli sheni. So the allowance of using a kli sheni to warm things up implicitly prohibits doing this in a kli rishon, and that we find in the Shulchan Aruch, and that ignores hot money issues. The Taz assumes the reason why it ignores the hot money issues is because some of the pot is left outside of the heating environment, or because some opinions, such as Rashi, let us place something into an environment where they could eventually cook, if the purpose is only to remove the cold or the heat, to reduce the cold. So for example, let's say I want to defrost something. can I put that near a heat that I can't if it was a cooking question? So Rashi seems to have held that as long as my purpose is to take away some of the cold, not to heat it up, but to take away some of the cold, that there I am allowed to do it. So others, such as the Rif and the Gaonim, had a different text of the Gemara, and they hold that you can, that even if your whole purpose is just to reduce the cold, as long as it's heating in an area where it could get hot enough that it would cook, it would be prohibited. So Rashi, therefore, might allow putting items into a Kli Rishon. Others only allow a Kli Sheni, because that's no longer an environment halakhically of cooking, meaning halakhically a Kli Sheni, for that this is a complicated question of cooking today, because the heat of a Kli Sheni can often be hot enough that something will cook in it, especially if it's something small and a big Kli Sheni maybe would cook, but halakhically it's not the same thing, and therefore there's more room to say that if what I'm doing is I'm putting it there just to reduce the cold, take away some of the cold of it, that I'm allowed to do that. But even those who allow that, they do require that the hot parts of the Kli Sheni not be hot enough to burn one's hand. Because there we have another gezeirah, another protective ordinance that says that we can't do it. So the upshot being that for Rav Filstein, he thought that if I have something very, very cold, a baby bottle, a quart of ice cream, although that's not a liquid, but something liquid, and I wanted to take it and it'd been brick or some soup, and it's a soup that's very cold, and that's fine, but I don't want it so cold. So I want to submerge its container into hot water, and that hot water is a Kli Sheni, meaning it's not it's not in something that's been on the fire. It's a hot water that has been poured out of the original cooked urn into something else. So you can easily imagine, right? I have a large pot of hot water. I pour some of that hot water into a second pot. That pot is still big enough that I can take a container of liquid and put it into it in the container to try to cool some cool it down, but to try to reduce the cold, to heat it up a little bit, not in terms of getting it hot, but in terms of reducing the cold of it. The Rav Filstein thought that if it's a Kli Sheni, it should be okay, and I can even put it, as long as I don't put it completely in where the cover is submerged as well, I should be okay. Whereas Rav Hildesheimer says that not having cooled completely, when I say that the item that I can still cool, he thinks that this is where he says it, right? He thinks it has to still be Yad Soledipo, which would seem to make it impossible submerging it only to reduce some of its cold. But and also he thinks that leaving the top out of the water to avoid the hot money issues is not sufficient either, because it has to not have a cover on it. Rav Filstein goes by saying that in cases of necessity, he thinks there's room to rely on the ideas that he's presented. And then he says, but it's not sure you can rely on it in practice. And then Rav Hildesheimer says, I don't know what you mean by necessity, and I don't know where you're going to apply it. You mean somebody who's ill, somebody who's healthy? And he says, and a lot of these things are going against the Shulchan Aruch, and I can't believe you're arguing against the Shulchan Aruch. So that's the back and forth on these questions. These are issues that come up often, hot money issues. I think mostly on the halakhic issues, Rav Hildesheimer reflects the practice that we have today. I think we assume not that liquids have to be Yad Soledipo in order, but we do assume that if they have Azal Bishulo Legamre, that if they've completely lost their heat, that then they're considered uncooked and you're not allowed to rewarm them up. And the definition of when they've lost that would be something to consider. Another last piece of this I just want to point out is that Rav Hildesheimer's way of responding to Rav Filstein is to put notes in his thing. I mean, he doesn't write a tshuva, actually. The way this is presented is the Rav Filstein's letter with notes in it, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, and then you look down at the bottom, and on Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Vav, he gives you notes on the thing. So he didn't actually respond. He just gave notes on it, and this is the back and forth they had about the question of, about a question, is submerging something while it's not submerging it fully sufficient to avoid hatpana, or does it require that the top be uncovered? Rav Hildesheimer thought that the top had to be uncovered in order to avoid the hatpana question. Then the bishul question, the cooking question, if you have liquid that has previously been completely cooked, until when is it that you're allowed to consider rewarming it, not to be considered recooking it? Rav Hildesheimer seems to have felt that, that it was only while it was still Yad Soledipo, it was only while it was still hot enough that people would recoil from touching it, and if it got warmer than that or cooler than that, that would no longer be considered cooked, and then recooking it would be a bishul problem as well, and those are the issues between them. That was one question that came up. That was for the 17th of Sivan in the year 5634, 1874. Okay, 1874, that's one question that came up. Then, over 100 years later, on the 17th of Sivan, 5747, 1987, Tzitz Eliezer, in volume 18, Tshuva 12, was asked about adding water to an air cooler. So an air cooler is something that a lot of people know, but I didn't the first time I ever wrote this. I had to look it up, and I'm still not quite sure how it works. But basically, when you evaporate water into the air, it cools off the air. So for hundreds of years or thousands of years, people have been doing this, where you'll set up something which will evaporate the water into the air, and that will help the air out there get, first of all, moister, and secondly, cooler. And that's and so the questioner wanted to know why it is or how it is that you're allowed to use if you're allowed to add water to a humidifier, to an air cooler on Shabbos, right? The way they work it is there's water in this air cooler, and there's a fan that as the water evaporates sort of fans it or sucks the water out of the water. I think is in like a spongy kind of material, which is wet, fully wet with water, and there's a fan drawing evaporated water out of it and spraying it into the air. So the question is, let's say that the spongy material is running out of water, can you add water to it? So the questioner notes there might be a problem of zora. We generally, and this comes from planting, but generally on Shabbos, you're not allowed to throw things into the wind. Here too, you're trying to get the water to be thrown into the wind, into the air, because that will moisten and cool the air, and that's an issue. And there's also an issue of melabate, that the air cooler had a layer of straw. That was the spongy material that would contain the water in it for the water to evaporate from. And when you're applying water to it, in some sense, are you not washing it? Because in general, we think that adding water to things or pouring water on things washes it, right? So that's why, for example, one is not allowed to put water on one's clothing on Shabbat, even if it's just to stop a stain from staining. That's a malabing problem. That's a problem of washing. So that's the questioner wants to know. Are we allowed to add water to these air coolers on Shabbat? Tzitz Eliezer points out, and this is something that comes up frequently in Tshuvot, that the people who ask Tshuvot have noted it before, but it's worth thinking about. Tzitz Eliezer uses the phrase, She'ilat Chacham Chatzi Tshuva, that the way that the man asks the question is that it gives half the answer, meaning that he's wise enough to know what the issues are and to have brought them up. And that's what happens. The questioners did not just raise the question, they showed that they understood some or all of the halakhic principles at play, offering their insights and then asking for a reaction. So Tzitz Eliezer agrees that malabim zora is not a problem because that's about being zora, spreading things to the wind is about wheat and chaff. And when you have wheat and you're trying to differentiate the wheat from the chaff and you throw it up to the wind for the wind to blow the chaff off the wheat, that's zora. But that's not what we're doing here with the water. We're just trying to get the water into the air. So that's not a zora problem. He also agrees that it's not really a malabin problem. It's not a washing problem because it's true we're putting water on those things, but there's no sense in which we're washing it. So that it's not true that all watering of items is a malabin issue, because sometimes when the water goes on, it doesn't clean it at all, and that's not a malabin issue. And so that's not the point of it, and therefore that's not always the issue. So whenever one puts water on something, it might be a malabin issue. It might be an issue of washing it, but it might not. So in this case, it's not, because there's no washing going on. There's no cleansing happening. Nonetheless, the Tzitz Eliezer thinks that it's prohibited for a different reason. And he says that layer of straw, which in other air coolers might be made of something else, but that layer where you put the water so that it will sit there so that it can then be drawn out by the fan to cool the air is muktza, right? It's not something that we're allowed to move on Shabbat, and why not? Because the purpose of that item is something that we cannot ourselves do on Shabbat, and that's the definition of muktza. The definition of muktza is any item whose main purpose is, that's one definition of muktza, one kind of muktza, any item whose main purpose is something that we ourselves could not do on Shabbat. You don't have to stop it from happening on Shabbat, but you're not allowed to then move it. So adding water to the straw moves the straw, and that's a violation of the rabbinic decree that we cannot move muktza items. Now, the straw doesn't move all that much, right? It mostly stays where it is, but he points to Magen Avraham in Shin Chaf Aleph 321, Seif Katan Hay, like small paragraph 5, who prohibited pouring water on meat. Right, so that's not the same issue at all, but the reason why it's relevant to us is because meat also is something that doesn't move that much when you pour water on it. Meat is fairly heavy. And Magen Avraham says it's not allowed, even if that's the meat's third day. So that's a side issue that's still relevant in our times. The relevant question there is, and then we'll come back to the, and it's coming up because it's a muksa question. Kosher meat has to be salted, right? And the Gaonic tradition was that it had to be salted within 3 days of having been killed. And the reason for that was that the Gaonic tradition was that if it wasn't salted within 3 days of being killed, the salt dries so fully within the animal that it can't, dries so fully within the animal that the salt can't draw it out, and therefore it can't be removed, and therefore you'll the people who eat that meat will necessarily be eating meat with dam in it, with blood in it. That's a problem. So that's a Gaonic prohibition. One way that that time period could be extended was if you wet the meat, because if you wet the meat, the blood inside stays moist and therefore removable by salting. So if for whatever reason you had meat that had not yet been koshered, and there could be various reasons for this, so that was an issue. I don't know if it's still an issue, but I know that, you know, when I was young, let's say, when I was in yeshiva for the year, one question that was very common at the time was a lot of the meat in Israel at the time was being shipped from South America. That was a convenient place to get meat. I think it was a cheaper place to get meat than you were going to get it if you were going to raise the animals elsewhere. So there were restaurants that served meat, and it was known as basar kafui, because it obviously takes more than 3 days to get meat from South America to Israel. And you didn't want to salt the meat until it got to Israel, I think because in order to keep it fresh, you don't want to salt it yet, because salting it already starts the time clock on when it can be considered fresh meat. So they wanted to salt it once it got to Eretz Israel. And so their solution was to freeze it. And there was a machloket, and I know it comes out, some said yes and some said no. I don't know what they do today. I don't even know if they use that meat anymore. But the freezing it was supposed to stop the clock on the 3 days. Meaning, if you shecht an animal, you slaughter an animal, slice it up into pieces of meat, and then freeze it right away, freeze it rock hard, does that mean that when you defrost it, it's like day one, and the blood is not yet dried in a way that it's stuck, according to this Gaonic Chumrah, or not? Regardless of that question, that's a question for today in terms of freezing, but that's where it comes up today. People talk about the three-day issue. But in the Magen Avraham's time, let's say you had meat, you hadn't gotten around to salting it for whatever reason, so could you water it? You could water it. That was accepted. Watering it, started the clock over again, gave you another 3 days. So let's say it turns out the third day there's this meat that you haven't salted and you are going to now lose the ability to salt it. What about pouring water on them? So the Magen Avraham said, you can't do that because he has a few reasons, but one of the reasons is the meat is muktza. Why is the meat muktza? Because until you salt the meat, you can't eat it, and therefore we can't do anything with it on Shabbos, and we cannot cause muktza items to move, even if we don't touch the actual items. So that's the Magen Avraham's reasoning, and that is what the Tzitzit Eliezer is applying here to our situation of our straw. Tzitzit Eliezer adds at the Chazon Ish in Orach Chaim, Mem Aleph 41, Ted Zion 16, had argued that any tight item we tend not to move becomes a muktza, and then we can't get any benefit from interacting with it on Shabbat. The Chazon Ish's example was a candle, where the actual muktza is the flame, but since the whole candle is an item we generally leave in place and we don't generally move, that makes the whole candle muktza, and therefore we can't touch it. Why is that relevant to our discussion here? Because the air cooler also isn't generally moved, other than just to add water. But the Tzitzit thinks that means the whole air cooler is muktza on Shabbos, and therefore you can't touch it, and therefore you can't add water to it. There's a bit more back and forth in the tshuva, but that's his conclusion. To me, it was interestingly in line with Rav Hilda Simon before him, and that the both of them were being asked about ways to act in non-Shabbat ways on Shabbat, one being to submerge food into hot water in ways that hadn't been done before Shabbat, or to add water to air coolers. And in both cases, our Meshivim turned down the reasons and they stuck with the tradition that you couldn't do these things. Both of these men are people who were willing to go out on their own and go out in new directions when they felt the halacha required it and justified it. But for today, the 17th of Sivan, Rav Hildesheimer held that you cannot, in fact, fully submerge a container, even a covered container, into liquid. He thought if you left the cover uncovered, then maybe you could. He thought there were hatmana issues. If it was liquid that was completely cooled, he thought there were bishul issues. And he also thought that we tend to assume that with bishul, we don't tend to assume that if you're only removing the cold, not planning on heating it, that's allowed to do in a very, very hot container. He thought even that would be problematic. That was Rav Hildesheimer for the 17th of Sivan. And when he came to water coolers on Shabbat, Rav Eliezer held that we cannot add water to them, not because of a Zorah issue, right, and not because of a Malabin issue, a washing or cleaning issue, but because of a Muksa issue, because he thought the air coolers were a Muksa, and he also thought that even the minimal movement that happens to the straw or the whatever material it is that's going to contain the water, even that minimal movement is a problem of Muksa on Shabbos. Two cases for the Shabbat halachot dealt with on the 17th of Sivan in Jewish history, and that's a response of the day for the 17th of Sivan. Have a great day.